Hello, this is Father David Nix on the Padre Peregrino podcast. This is TCE, Theology and Current Events, number 44, titled Elizabeth Yor and the Catholic Church in China. Mrs. Yor, welcome to my podcast, and thank you so much for joining my listeners.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you today on this, the Feast of Our Lady, Help of Christians.
Not a coincidence as you texted me.
No, the patron saint of the patron of China, and Chinese Catholics love, or they call her Our Lady of Shishan, which is where the pilgrimage is, but also Our Lady of Help of Christians.
And tell us what's happening today, not just on anniversary terms, but literally in real time today.
In real time today, Cardinal Joseph Zen, the beloved, brave, bold, devoted son of China, son of the Catholic Church in China, was in court today. He's been charged under the new national security law with colluding with foreign forces. He went into court today. He was arrested on May 11th. In court, his first court date, he pled not guilty and was given a trial date of September 19th. Also, not ironically, the day after the signing of the first China-Vatican deal, which was September 18th, 2018. So, dear Cardinal Zen, like many others, is facing the show trial in the new unfree Hong Kong, and it's a very serious, sobering day for the Church in China.
And one of the things you and I are talking about off the air is previously Christians in China have always been used to persecution. Catholics especially have been used to great persecution, but they've always had the support of the Vatican. This is what is going to be kind of the showstopper towards the second half of this podcast, is why, again, this isn't just American Western traditional Catholics like Liz, Yor, and I complaining. We're going to see what the bishops and cardinals of China have to say about the lack of support coming from the Vatican in the second half of this. But the first half of this podcast, we do want to cover the basics of the church's history in China, especially the 20th century Catholic Church's history in China. I want to give a quick CV for Mrs. Yor out there. Elizabeth Yor is an international child protection attorney specializing in the investigation of missing, abducted, and exploited children. She is a graduate of Georgetown University, another Jesuit place. I was a BC grad. But she's also a Loyola School of Law grad in Chicago, where she got her JD. And she and I have fun talking about Chicago off the air because my parents are from Chicago. Liz was also general counsel for the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, where she created the nation's first child welfare missing wards unit at DCFS, which identified, tracked, and recovered missing DCFS wards and investigated clergy abuse cases. Liz served as both general counsel and director of the International Division at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, NCMEC, in Arlington, Virginia, which is the National Clearinghouse for Missing and Exploited Children, both in the U.S. and around the world. Liz regularly appears on Steve Bannon's War Room podcast, and she is a panel member of the LifeSite News podcast called Faith and Reason with our mutual friends Father Jim Altman and Jack Maxey. Actually, I don't know Jack Maxey, but I know John Henry Weston by phone call and text. Liz writes for various news sites, including Breitbart, Town Hall, Daily Caller, and The Remnant. She is co-host with Jack Maxey and Father Jim Altman of the new LifeSite News podcast, Faith and Reason. And today, we're going to actually start off, maybe, you know, Liz and I could talk, since I've been in the anti-trafficking world, we could probably do a whole two-hour podcast on that, but we're going to focus specifically on the lives of persecuted Christians. Liz, why did you get involved in the lives of persecuted Christians?
Well, you know, Father, I asked myself that, and then I realized when I was in the midst of investigating what was going on in the Chinese Catholic Church, I realized that as a child, from a very young age, both at every meal in my home and also in school, we used to pray for the poor, starving children of China. And the teachers would often talk about the martyrs of China and what was going on in the Chinese church, the nuns that taught us. And I really have to believe that that was put in my heart, you know, in the very early parts of my life. In 2013, I was invited to attend the human trafficking conference at the Vatican, right in the heart of the Vatican. It was early on in Francis's papacy. And I was excited to go because this man was talking about human trafficking, which was, you know, an issue that I had spent much of my legal career working in. And so I went there, and it's the Pontifical Academy sits right next to the Vatican Gardens. There were only 80 people there, mostly from around the world. And I have to say that my soul was rattled when I attended this conference. It was 3 days. There was another American that I knew there, and halfway through the conference, this will give you a little flavor of what was like. He turned to me and said, "Liz, are we the only pro-lifers here?" And, you know, here I am, you know, in the Vatican, and I thought I had just walked into a radical Obama Department of Justice conference on human trafficking.
So when you say rattled, you don't mean you were rattled that you were surrounded by like-minded people who wanted to fight trafficking. You meant you were rattled that you were around ultra progressives.
Yeah. I was hearing about climate change, whatever that has to do with human trafficking. I was hearing about global minimum wage. I was hearing about radical transformation. But I wasn't hearing about the evil that drives human trafficking at all. And I thought I had attended the wrong conference. And I could not believe that I was having this experience in the Vatican. And I was shocked. I was not even trusting my own gut instincts. I was like, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm not reading this properly. And I also met Francis. He came to the group, the small group. It wasn't on the Congo line. I was in his presence for about 20 minutes, close presence. And so I had an opportunity to observe him. And I have to say, Father, I left that conference in 2013, really making a pledge to myself. And I did not expect any of this, that I was going to really track, investigate, follow closely what was going on in the Vatican, in this papacy, as well as at the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences. I had to really test what I was seeing with my eyes. Was something really going on in the Vatican that was a radical departure from, you know, the Catholic faith that I was raised in, was cradle Catholic? And despite going to spending, I think it was 16 years in Jesuit schools, I'm still a Catholic. And so I immediately started, when I got back to Chicago, researching, following all the radical conferences that were put on by the Bergoglio Vatican.
And there's some things as far as when we speak of papacy, you come to some conclusions that I have that we probably won't jump into today. But I think it's important for our listeners to hear that you went there in 2013 with an olive branch, excited to work with that. You didn't go there for muckraking reasons. I think it's important that people understand as they listen to this podcast, Liz Yore went to the Vatican in 2013. Not to come to her current conclusions on the papacy, but really to be their favorite word, a collaborator on all of this stuff. And I think that's good for our listeners to have on the back burner when they see that we wanted to be very open-minded to this stuff, but came to very different conclusions.
Correct. And that's exactly right. And so what I found out was that this was a radical globalist administration regime that was pushing the UN Sustainable Development Goals, inviting, you know, the Pontifical Academy is the think tank of the Vatican. And it was set up by John Paul II to bring in both sides of complex issues and to discuss issues, both sides, and for the Vatican to have the benefit of hearing both sides. Well, that stopped under Bergoglio. There was only one radical side that was being presented. People like Jeffrey Sachs, who was the, you know, ultimate insider at the UN pushing the sustainable development goals, which are the abortion-tainted, contracepting, depopulation agenda of the world globalists. Look, I have to thank that experience, you know, really from the bottom of my heart, because what it forced me to do is to learn about the church in a deeper way, learn about the history of the church in a deeper way, really understand the persecution of the modern day church. And as a result, I began to question everything that Bergoglio was doing, such as this Vatican Chinese agreement, the secret agreement with the CCP. And so I was especially interested when Archbishop Vigano released his first testament declaration. And I, too, had much the same experience, having been involved with clergy abuse scandals, many, many cases in the Archdiocese of Chicago and around the world, knowing about McCarrick as I did. So when I read what was said by Vigano, I realized there's something going on with this Chinese-Vatican agreement. I've got to look deeper, because in 2013, this hideous, you know, detente with China was resurrected by the resurrected career of this global serial predator, Ted McCarrick, Uncle Ted, as they were called, or as he had himself called. And so I began to dig deeply into Ted McCarrick and his political alignments and alliances, which are, of course, the Democratic Party, which, of course, you know, Ted McCarrick was going to China well into the early 90s, when very few people went to communist China. He, in my research, he was friends with the high-level members of the Communist Chinese Party. By 1998, he had been to China already 5 times. And so the fact that Francis, according to Vigano, had tapped and really dispatched this global serial predator as his diplomatic envoy to restart the China talks was to me a sign that this was going to be a deal with the devil. And anyway, it was that really piqued my interest. I was also at the time, because of my work with the Vatican, on the Save the Persecuted Christians committee, in really trying to raise the awareness of the public about Christians being persecuted around the world, and heard an earful from my evangelical friends about this papacy. Because, you know, one thing that Catholics, I don't think, realize or can appreciate is that the evangelicals, the Christians, have over the centuries relied on the Catholic Church, on the Pope, to do the heavy lifting in battling communism and modernism and all the evils in the world. Is that, you know, it's always been the Catholic Church that has had the martyrs who have taken on, you know, the evil cultures and have fought the good fight. And, you know, I had the evangelical friends at the Save the Persecuted Christians say to me, we don't know what we're going to do with this Marxist in the Vatican. And so, again, I was hearing this constant refrain of this radical modernist global Vatican and the damage that it was doing. And so this Vatican agreement with China became really uppermost in my mind, thanks to Archbishop Vigano's kind of heads up of what was happening.
In case you're tempted to think, oh, Father Dave Nix and Liz, you are just two crazy traditional Catholics, just go Google names like Jeffrey Sachs and Cardinal Zen, and you can find on secular websites that pro-abortion, pro-contraception Jeff Sachs is very welcome in the Vatican, and Cardinal Zen is very unwelcome in the Vatican. So I just encourage people to pause. If people think any of the things we're talking about is just too outrageous, go do your own research as you're listening to this, and find out for yourself if what we're saying is true. Because amazingly, even though they're not going to highlight the same parts of the story, you're going to find all these facts on secular media. Now, Liz and I, we were tempted to go all the way. But there's a book by Ignatius Press that talks about the Catholic Church from 50 AD till, I think, 1900. And so there's even rumors that the apostles made it to China. We're not going to go into those rumors, or rather it's a debate. It's not just rumors. There's a debate on that. We were probably talking about off the air, looking at the from the Boxer Rebellion till Vatican II, the Catholic Church from the Boxer Rebellion to Vatican II. But I think what we're going to do is maybe just skip the missionaries who were there in the 20th century and look at why Pope Pius XII wrote an encyclical Liz had me read before we actually started podcasting today. It's called Ad Apostolorum Principis, and it was written by Pope Pius XII to the Catholics in China. And in that, he delineates two parallel lines of apostolic succession. One, known popularly as the underground church. That doesn't mean you should picture them literally underground like the catacombs in Rome. They're often hidden, maybe literally underground sometimes. But two different apostolic lines, the underground church and the patriotic church. Mm-hmm. And it's really important, as Liz and I continue this podcast, to understand that the patriotic church is communist bishops who have valid sacraments but have been against orthodox teaching of divine revelation of the magisterium since communism started in China. So, Liz, can you give us a little bit of the overview of the underground church of bishops, the patriotic church of bishops, and what that had to do with Pope Pius XII?
Sure. This was part of my research. When I heard that Zen was talking about the underground church, I got to find out about this church. Well, how did it get started? And the underground church in 1949, when Mao Zedong came into power in China, was created by the communists. It is a fascinating history. Now, what was happening in China in the 1920s is the Mary Knowles from the United States largely were sending over priests into China. They were going from village to village, and people who had never heard of Jesus Christ, and converting village after and being enormously successful in spreading the faith. A lot of Irish young men from, you know, big families were in China as Mary Knowlers. And once, you know, and this got the attention of Mao Zedong. And so once he came into being, there he began the crackdown, specifically in Shanghai, which was just thriving in the Catholic with the Catholic Church. And as a result, they began arresting, torturing, detaining Catholic priests and bishops as well. One of the most famous and beloved was Bishop Ignatius Kung. And I heard about him when I was growing up. And Ignatius Kung was the bishop of Shanghai. And Shanghai in the early 1950s. Oh, Father, when you read about this, it's just incredible.
Just for my listeners to get this, you know, Liz and I share, we are Irish Catholics from Chicago, Jesuit educated. The Mary Knowles and the Jesuits 100 years ago, they're not doing what Mary Knoll and Jesuit missionaries now do. Now it's social justice. The Irish Mary Knowles and the Jesuits 100 years, not just 500 years ago, Francis Xavier's next wave. Francis Xavier died on the island Sanxiang just off of China. It was his big dream to go to China. He died there thinking he had failed, even though he baptized 500,000 other Asians. Well, the next wave of Jesuits finally made it to China. So at the very last, I think maybe the apostles did get there, but at the very latest, the second wave of Jesuits after Francis Xavier made it there in the 16th century. And then you had waves and waves of Jesuits, Franciscans, probably Dominicans, probably diocesan priests, native clergy being raised up. But yeah, we're only talking 100 years ago that missionaries went for heaven and hell. They really believed that there was a difference between heaven and hell, and the biggest difference was made on the faith and baptism, if they were going to be saved or not. And they were willing to be tortured for this. And this is what the Jesuits and the missionaries from Mary Knoll were doing just 100 years ago. It raised up heroic native clergy like Cardinal Kung, and we'll get back to you on that topic of Kung.
So Kung they had in the early 1950s in Shanghai, although there was persecution going on, they were creating with the young people, Legion of Marys, sodalities, pilgrimages to Our Lady of Shishan. the faith was going wild. It was just so, and so what Mao and his collaborators understood is that he had to crack down on this Catholic Church where everybody was believing that their God was Jesus Christ and not Mao Zedong. But Mao understood that he had to create a parallel church that would be faithful to him and the communist ideals. And he called it the Patriotic Catholic Association. But, you know, Bishop Kung, all the young people, all the other bishops, they understood that this was nothing but a tool of the Communist Party, and they refused to join. And as a result of, and this is, by the way, everybody should realize, the very same Catholic Patriotic Association that Pope Francis is telling everybody to embrace and join. You know, so it's gone back a long time in the 1950s. Any Chinese Catholics who were living back then understood that the Patriotic Association, which was in essence an aping, right, of the Catholic Church, because once Mao could create this Patriotic Catholic Church, he could control it. He couldn't control the church that was faithful to Rome. And as a result, many, for example, a bishop, a Mariano bishop, Francis Xavier Ford, was arrested early on, tortured, starved, and died, and is now a servant of God, Bishop Francis Xavier Ford, from a big Irish family in New York. And Cardinal or Bishop Kung, Ignatius Kung, who was really leading the fight, and I would encourage people, there's some great books out there, leading the fight of people to stay strong and not to submit to the, you know, the hammer that was communism.
Tell us that stadium story.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, 1957, I believe, they finally, the CCP, a Communist Chinese Party, arrest Cardinal Bishop Kung. He soon became Cardinal Kung. And he disappeared, like many of the bishops today. Many Catholic bishops who refused to join the Patriotic Association because they know it's phony, because they know it's just a tool of the CCP, he disappeared. His congregation, nobody had seen him for years and years and years and never heard about from him. And so they either assumed that he was dead, or that, you know, they had just, you know, done away with him and so that nobody would ever see. But at some point, I think about 20, but their deep concern was, would Bishop Kung, you know, sell us out? Would he submit to the Patriotic Church of China? And so the CCP trotted him out in his chains and in his prison uniform. I think it must have been 20 years he had been missing. All of a sudden they see him, and he they ask him a question about, you know, what God do you believe, or, you know, what church do you profess? And he began to sing, was it Te Deum? Te Deum? He sang.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that's all he said. He never responded to the question, but saying that. And they knew that he was faithful and had not succumbed. Now,
to the Patriotic Church.
Yes, he was still a faithful Catholic. And in, I think it was about 1991, after 33 years, he was released from prison and in house arrest. And then finally he was sent, he left China and returned to Stamford, Connecticut.
Connecticut, right.
Yeah. And there's this.
With his nephew. He lived the last years with his nephew,
the
right?
The Kung Foundation. So you can read these stories on the Kung Foundation. But anyway, there's this great, there's this great story where he's giving this interview. And after he's been released from prison, and they're asking him, so, and he became a cardinal, John Paul II, in secret, in pectore.
In pectore.
Pectore, made him a cardinal. And so they interviewed him and said, so, Cardinal Kung, Were you tortured? And he said, the only person who needs to know is God. Nobody else needs to know. God saw everything. So he refused to disclose whether he was tortured. And then they said, did you have your breviary? No. Were you able to say Mass? No. Well, did you have your rosary? No, I had nothing. And they said, well, how did you pray? What did you do? And he put up his 10 fingers and he said, I had 10 fingers for the rosary. And Our Lady brought him through 33 years of torture and imprisonment. And, you know, this great, powerful leader who was just, you know, disappeared, as they say in China. So he lived out the rest of his life in America. But his story and, you know, and so many others, not as well-known priests who refused to join the Patriotic Church. Well, Father, after I heard and read about this, I became an absolute supporter of Cardinal Zen and the, you know, and the fact that this Pope, you know, Bergoglio would, you know, order and give license to the Chinese Catholic Church to join this patriotic church, which had, as a result of, you know, Mao's hammer, so many people had died in the Catholic Church, and not just priests, and no one will ever know. But they loved, you know, the true faith. They understood better than even we could understand what the patriotic church was. So that was, you know, and again, it was such a gift. You know, had I not gone to the Vatican in 2013, I would not have been learning about this incredible witness in the church in China. So,
And Liz, real quick interjection there. Most of my listeners have heard me say that. So I'm sorry to bore them with this, but I pointed out on numerous podcasts, there have been 70 million Christian martyrs in 2000 years. And it was actually a study from the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. So just so people know, I'm not just quoting some traditional outlet here. Archdiocese of Philadelphia about 10 years ago, I saw this in seminary. Actually, it was about 12, 13 years ago when I was in seminary, last couple years of my seminary. I saw this stat out of Philadelphia. There have been 70 million Christian martyrs in 2,000 years, and 45.5 million of them have all died in the past 100 years. So literally, the majority of all Christian martyrs have died in the past 100 years. Not the first 500 years. The majority have died the last 100 years at 45.5 million. And that was the stat I saw 13 years ago when I was in seminary. And most of those 45.5 million that have died the past 100 years, again, of the 70 million over 2,000 years, most of those 45 million have died at the hands of communists. Mm-hmm. So people have to understand that communists are currently killing more than the Roman Empire did in the early Christian years.
It's amazing, isn't it? And it's and so what was so troubling to me, but was this agreement that Francis was beginning to negotiate using the most despicable human being, you know, in the church, McCarrick, as his envoy. In the first, you know, several years, McCarrick was back and
forth. Yeah, you know, let's skip Pius the 12th because we can kind of look back to Adipostolorum Principis to see how what's happening now is not just 5 degrees off from what Pius the 12th said on the Patriotic Church, but a full 180 degrees off. And remember, you know, even though St. Thomas Aquinas says patriotism is a virtue, you have to remember that the Patriotic Church has nothing to do with true patriotism to what China, even in its pagan roots, was founded on. I mean, they crushed everything of Confucianism, everything at that Boxer Rebellion. So there's nothing patriotic about the Patriotic Catholic Church of China. It's purely communist and it's purely satanic.
Right. And, you know,
they have valid sacraments, so maybe I shouldn't say purely satanic. They have valid sacraments, as even Pope Pius XII recognized, but they are undermining the faith of the Catholic Church.
They are. And one of the things that Bishop James Walsh, another Maryknoll of Shanghai, who was also imprisoned, wrote to his Father General of the Maryknolls in 1948. Already they were getting a sense, and he said, nobody has any illusions about the red determination to eliminate all religions. That's what, you know, it is atheistic, and there is no room to honor anybody but the state. And so as you know, and I would really encourage people, as a result of kind of digging in, I saw all these encyclicals, Father, about on communism. That I was like, in the Chinese church, there were just these rich, you know, Pius the 12th, Pius the 11th, Leo the 13th, all, you know, talking about modernism and talking about, and they really had their hand on the pulse. You know, they didn't have the internet, but they knew exactly what was happening in China. They were listening to their bishops and their priests who were talking about, you know, the persecution and what the Chinese Communist Party was doing.
That's right.
I was just like, this golden, rich history of the church and these encyclicals, you know, I'm struggling through, you know, let me see, Laudato Si, you know, 5,000, you know, words of dribble. And yet there's this brilliant, so, you know, go back.
Yeah, you know, as long as, and you had me read Ad Apostolorum Principis. Yeah. This was the 1958 encyclical written by Pope Pius XII to the Chinese Catholics. I just want to read a couple sentences here. This is number 13 and 14. It says, while they declare that it is essential that every kind of freedom exists in religious matters and that this makes mutual relations between the ecclesiastical and civil powers easier, this association in reality, he's talking about the Patriotic Church, aims at setting aside and neglecting the rights of the church and affecting its complete subjection to civil authorities. Hence, all its members are forced to approve those unjust prescriptions by which missionaries are cast into exile and by which bishops, priests, and religious men, nuns, and the faithful in considerable numbers are thrust into prison. To consent to those measures by which the jurisdiction of many legitimate pastors is persistently obstructed to defend wicked principles totally opposed to the unity, universality, and hierarchical constitution of the church, to admit those first steps by which the clergy and faithful are undermined in obedience due to legitimate bishops and to separate Catholic communities from the apostolic see. So the Patriotic Church was set up to separate true Orthodox Catholic Christians from the apostolic see. Now what we're going to see as we jump into the 2018 Sino-Vatican deal, it's not just 5 degrees off of that. We're going to see that that deal is a full 180 degrees different. But before we look at what started happening in 2018, why don't you tell us what McCarrick had to do with any of this in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, Liz?
Well, you know, there still needs to be a lot of research about what McCarrick was up to visiting China, Cuba. You know, we can talk about in another podcast the secret Cuba deal that McCarrick negotiated on behalf of Obama, and Francis participated in. So that's, you know, McCarrick, you know, in my opinion, is a communist. And he had spent many years going back and forth to China, always staying at a seminary, which is troubling to me. Mm-hmm. So I have to believe that the Chinese Communist Party and officials knew exactly who McCarrick was. The Chinese communists understand bribing people, blackmailing people, and he had friends in high places. And Father, you know, Cardinal McCarrick was on U.S. State Department, you know, envoys, religious freedom treks, committees, commissions. He had a diplomatic passport that he could use. You know, those kinds of things open a lot of doors when you're traveling around the world. You know, the charming sociopath, you know, with the, you know, the Irishman with the little twinkle in his eye. And so I think, you know, ultimately this was the prize, wasn't it? The deal between China and the Vatican. Never been able to co-opt the Vatican.
And not the Chinese people, the CCP in the Vatican.
That's right. And that's a distinction that has to be made. And so along comes, you know, Bergoglio, and within, 3 months? 3 months of his election, he is dispatching this monster, McCarrick, to China after he has been told by Vigano that McCarrick has a file this big in the Vatican about his preying on young boys and seminarians. And nevertheless, and, you know, and in diplomatic events and negotiations, you want to have people who cannot be blackmailed, who have the purest intent, and yet you send this guy over there to restart negotiations. You know, Benedict understood what the Chinese Communist Party, they lied, they cheat, they deceive, they don't keep their bargains. And Francis had been told by Zen early on and by others that, you know, the Communist Party in China even is 10 times worse than they were in the 50s. I mean, much more skilled.
Really?
They have all the tools of the internet and technology.
Yes.
To create all sorts of mayhem in their social credit score, et cetera, et cetera. Nevertheless, this was, you know, in my opinion, one of the goals of whoever placed Bergoglio in this position was, and you can just, and I think there's also, as I recall, commentary that one of the first calls he made when he became Pope was to Xi Jinping, the president of China.
Let's be clear just for everybody up to this point that when you look at the teaching of Pope Pius XII, Bishop Ignatius Kung, and Cardinal Zen of Hong Kong, all of them are promoting the underground church of Catholic Christians and the underground bishops, and they all understand that the patriotic bishops, although they have valid sacraments, undermine the faith. And this is common teaching among Pope Pius XII, Cardinal Kung, and, correct me if I'm wrong, even Cardinal Zen of Hong Kong on trial today.
And Father, some of the bishops in the patriotic church are married, have sorted lives, you know, publicly, you know, terrible lives are known. And many of them were excommunicated by John Paul as well as Ratzinger and Benedict. And so, you know, we're talking about people that are not, you know, your pure holy men who want to live lives, you know, that should be followed. So
let's see. Yeah, let's jump into how the Vatican handed over the power to this patriotic hierarchy, this communist hierarchy in China. So what I'd like to do for everyone is quote three secular sources so our listeners know that we're not just quoting traditional Catholic outlets. All of these are accurate that I'm quoting from in secular media, something I rarely do. I think all these are accurate. Liz, you can correct me if anything you hear I say that's not accurate. The Guardian, we're going to talk about now how the Vatican handed over power to these communists. So this is from the UK's The Guardian in 2018. And the two big years to be listening for, even though we're recording this in 2022, if you're listening in the future, we're making this podcast in May of 2022. The two big years to listen for is 2018 and 2020, because that changed the face of the Catholic Church in China. I don't want to say forever, because hopefully there's no forever behind that, but definitely it's increased their persecution since 2018 because of this inside deal. So even The Guardian in the UK in 2018 reads this, quote, in Beijing, the foreign ministry put out a statement saying, China and the Vatican will continue to maintain communications and push forward the process of improving relations between the two sides. But the deal was denounced by critics as a sellout to the communist government. Cardinal Joseph Zen, the former Archbishop of Hong Kong, who has led the opposition to the deal, told Reuters, quote, they're sending the flock into the mouths of the wolves. It's an incredible betrayal, end quote. And then Al Jazeera reads, China's roughly 12 million Catholics have for decades been split between a government-run association whose clergy are chosen by the atheist Communist Party and an unofficial underground church loyal to the Vatican. After years of slow negotiations, the Vatican sealed a historical provisional agreement with Beijing on the 22nd of September 2018. Okay, now let's fast forward to the year 2020. You have USA Today op-ed writer David Curry write, China's decades-long campaign against religious freedom has made it the largest of the most dangerous countries in the world to be a Christian, and the Catholic Church is enabling the enemy. Let me repeat that sentence for all the listeners. This is USA Today that has no love for the Catholic Church. China's decades-long campaign against religious freedom has made it the largest of the most dangerous countries in the world to be a Christian, and the Catholic Church is enabling the enemy. USA Today writer continues, despite criticism by the United States State Department and human rights agencies, the Vatican is renewing a two-year-old deal with the Chinese Communist Party, but offers the Chinese government a prominent role in appointing Catholic bishops in the country. And then be aware of this. Sino is the English adjective China from the same word in Latin. So now we're going to look at the Sino-Vatican deal that even especially Senator Mike Pompeo criticized heavily in a First Things article from 2020. I'm just going to read you a couple sentences from that. Senator Mike Pompeo wrote, "The human rights situation in China has deteriorated severely under the autocratic rule of Xi Jinping, especially for religious believers. Credible reports have exposed the Chinese Communist Party's program of forced sterilizations and abortions of Muslims in Xinjiang, its abuse of Catholic priests and lay people, and its assault on Protestant house churches, all of which are part of a sinicization campaign to subordinate God to the party while promoting Xi himself as an ultramundane deity." And then Senator Pompeo also tweeted in 2020, quote, "2 years ago, the Holy See reached an agreement with the Chinese Communist Party, hoping to help China's Catholics. Yet the CCP's abuse of the faithful has only gotten worse. The Vatican endangers its moral authority should it renew the deal," end quote. And then, of course, the Holy See did renew that deal with the Chinese Communists, and the Vatican would not meet with Pompeo. So, Liz, what did the Vatican-China deal do to faithful Chinese Catholics the past 4 years?
It's not just the Catholic, faithful Catholics. It is thousands, if not millions, of Christians that were persecuted as a result of this deal. And I can list what happened is within weeks of this deal being signed in 2018, the CCP began arresting priests, bishops, harassing Christian pastors, doing what I call is a demolition derby of these magnificent churches, Christian churches in China, just knocking off the crosses, knocking down the buildings, just left and right. It was as if the lights were turned on and Mao just took over the Christian faith in China. Human Rights Watch. I could go on for hours about the NGOs, or religious freedom organizations, that were just beside themselves about the Pope signing this deal. And remember, Cardinal Zen tried to meet with him at the very last minute. He went to the Vatican a number of times, and he kept on saying, if you sign this deal, it will be a sellout. It will be a suicide pact. It will be a total betrayal. And sure enough, it was. And Human Rights Watch issued in its annual report that little has improved for the millions of Catholics in China as a result of this deal. China Aid said in its annual report, talking about the Vatican CCP deal, this reported deal is nothing but a betrayal of both the millions of suffering and persecuted Christians in China and the global Catholic Church. Ironically, how can the Vatican respond with a good, clear conscience for this appeasement deal while the CCP just launched a secret war vowing to wipe out the underground church of Catholics and Protestants? The Congressional Executive Commission on China, it is an elite commission in Congress, bipartisan commission, said, unfortunately, although the agreement is only 2 months old, there are already signs that the provisions of this agreement will exacerbate the divide rather than heal it. You'll recall, Francis said, this is about trying to unify the church in China. And what, in fact, it had is a deeper divide, deeper persecution. The Gatestone Institute, respected religious freedom and freedom democracy organization, said the Vatican has become a mouthpiece for Beijing. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom said China used the Vatican deal to pressure clergy. And one of the things that we were hearing from Chinese, both Christians as well as Catholics, is when they would protest this uptick in persecution, the CCP thugs would say, well, the Vatican supports us. We have a deal. I know, it's just, it is so infuriating. And so as a result, what has happened is that there has been, just as a result, you can almost just mark the moment in 2018 when the deal was signed. And all we know about the deal, all we know is, I think, 27 words from the Vatican. Oh, it deals with the appointment of bishops, and that there will be, you know, coordination. And that coordination and cooperation meant that the good, holy, underground bishops had to step down, and the excommunicated bishops of the Patriotic Church were reinstalled. That's the kind of deal, you know, I keep on saying, you know, Bergoglio should have read Trump's The Art of the Deal, because this was not a good deal. What also happened, Father, that is just, it breaks my heart. And Zen talks about this. And, you know, I think of everything, this really just is, you know, just kills Zen. There was a law in China that had been passed that no child under the age of 18 would be allowed to go to church, would be allowed to go to a religious, like a vacation Bible camp, would be able to go to religious services or go to religious schools. That law was not enforced. But the moment the Vatican signed that deal, they would shut the doors to mothers, nursing mothers who were bringing in their infants, their tiny babies. It has been an absolute, like, the, you know, the curtain has gone down. So you have, essentially, we'll have a generation of children very quickly who will never even have faith or religion or understand. You know, on my Save the Persecuted Christians committee, the evangelicals keep telling me, you know, there are 300 million people in China who don't even know who Jesus Christ is, who've never even heard his name before. Right. And so it has been an absolute catastrophic failure. The Vatican has played into the hands of the CCP. It has given them license to destroy religion, you know, and I go back to Bishop Walsh saying, don't underestimate, you know, the determination of the Reds to eliminate all religions. That's what's happening in China. And the Vatican played right into their hands.
I usually don't have my listeners just read their articles, but Liz, you had an amazing article come out from Remnant Today, and it's so brilliant and so succinct that I will ask you to read that article if you have it on you.
Sure, I do.
What you wrote for the Remnant Today.
Okay, and let me set this up. We know that the Vatican has renewed the agreement in 2020, October 2020. This agreement was renewed. Again, there was an uptick in violence against the great Catholic Church, a free Catholic Church up until this time, of Hong Kong, and the Catholic Church that really was headed by Cardinal Zen for many, many years. And so, as
did you call it the Free Catholic Church?
Yeah, it was the Free Catholic Church. It was, you know, free to appoint its own bishops, to practice religion, to have the ability of the Catholic schools in Hong Kong were the best schools. They were thriving, and yet, as a result of the renewal, and of course the strong vocal resentment of Cardinal Zen in protest to the Vatican deal, the sights were set on Hong Kong. And we know about the, you know, 2019 democracy protest, freedom democracy protest, that was led largely by young Catholics, by Agnes Chow and Nathan Law and Cardinal Zen. You know, 90-year-old Cardinal Zen was also leading the Freedom March, where they would wave American flags.
I remember that.
Yeah, and it was the beginning of the crackdown with the new national security law, which was crafted in Beijing by Xi Jinping's government, and which basically said if you spoke against the government under any circumstances, however minor, you could be charged and thrown in jail. And after the 2019 March, Jimmy Lai, the great founder of the pro-democracy paper Catholic called Apple Daily, Jimmy was a great is a great supporter of Cardinal Zen. He was thrown in jail with a show trial, and his Apple Daily, which was the loved newspaper, daily newspaper that everybody read in Hong Kong about democracy and the faith, that was shut down and closed by the CCP. Jimmy Agnes Chow, the 20-something, very devout Catholic leader of the march, was thrown in jail for a 14-month sentence. And many others, and there was a fund, the 612 Humanitarian Fund, which was created to pay the legal funds, the educational, you know, family funds for those people that were put in jail.
Great. We'll link that at the end because I'd like to give people some good things to do. So okay. we'll make sure to link that in the show notes.
The background. May 11th, dear Cardinal Zen, 90-year-old, was arrested by the CCP for colluding with the foreign enemy.
2022,
yes. Yep. And the title is, and this is taken from Archbishop Vigano, who wrote in protest of what they did to Cardinal Zen, The Poisoned Fruits.
But this is your writing today in The Remnant, right?
Yeah. Okay. The Poisoned Fruits of a Poisonous Steel. Confucius say, silence is a true friend who never betrays. There is no better friend to communist China than the Bergoglio Vatican. During the 9 years of this interminable regime, the Holy See marched in quiet lockstep with Chinese President Xi Jinping and his brutal CCP enforcers, while Xi launched a strategic campaign of terror against Chinese Catholics and Christians. The destruction and persecution of Catholics continues unabated in mainland China, and now the once free Hong Kong is now firmly in the CCP crosshairs. Predictably, the symbols of religious freedom and truth are the first casualties of communism. Accordingly, Xi's henchmen rampaged and destroyed thousands of Christian houses of worship, churches, schools, and orphanages. President Xi, like Mao Zedong, is the self-appointed heavenly messenger whose photo now replaces all crucifixes and holy statues in churches throughout China. Yet more threatening than religious structures to the communists are the actual leaders and voices of religious freedom. With a weak President Biden and an ailing Bergoglio, Xi took advantage of the opportunity to make his move on Cardinal Zen, the leader of the religious freedom movement in Hong Kong. No voice of freedom is more beloved or respected than the 90-year-old emeritus Hong Kong Cardinal Joseph Zen, and no one more feared by the CCP. On May 11th, 2022, Beijing focused its furious crackdown on the frail but mighty prince of the Catholic Church and arrested Zen on trumped-up charges of colluding with foreign forces. Zen and the whole Hong Kong Catholics are on their own without the protection of the Vatican as they endure the growing persecution at the hands of the CCP. Bergoglio is either ignorant or uninterested in the stark historical lessons of the brutal Mao Zedong crackdown on the Chinese Catholic Church and its hierarchy in the 1950s, which left thousands of clerical arrests, detentions, deportations, disappearances, and deaths. Bergoglio's callous disregard of the ongoing destruction and persecution of the Hong Kong Catholic Church demands global condemnation. In 1957, Mao created the Chinese Patriotic Catholic Association, the one now embraced by Bergoglio. This Patriotic Association was to replace and control the faithful Roman Catholic Church, which had gone underground. As a result, the Catholic Church in China underwent a violent and widespread religious persecution at the hands of the Maoists. In response to that persecution, Pope Pius XII, in his 1958 encyclical on communism and the church in China, he powerfully warned the Catholic Church about the CCP-created sham Chinese Patriotic Catholic Church. This is the same patriotic church which Cardinal Zen and countless faithful Catholics refused to join, despite Bergoglio's urging in his secret deal with the communists. In 1958, Pope Pius XII threw down the papal gauntlet on the faux Chinese Patriotic Catholic Church, leaving no doubt as to its evil intent. Here he says, "For under an appearance of patriotism, which in reality is just a fraud, this association aims primarily at making Catholics gradually embrace the tenets of atheistic materialism by which God himself is denied and religious principles are rejected." Unlike Bergoglio's groveling submission to the CCP and its pseudo-Catholic Patriotic Association, Pope Pius XII starkly and unequivocally condemned the insidious persecution of faithful Catholics who refused to join the CCP's Patriotic Association. Pius described what these people endure. "In these meetings, the unwilling are forced to take part by incitement, by threats and deceit. If any bold spirit strives to defend the truth, his voice is easily smothered and overcome, and he is branded with a mark of infamy as an enemy of his native land and of the new society. In addition to these, there are methods by which minds are upset by every device, in private and in public, by traps, deceits, great fear, by so-called forced confessions, by custodies in a place where citizens are forcefully re-educated, and those quote-unquote people's courts to which even venerable bishops are ignominiously dragged for trial," end quote. Pius XII denounced the physical and psychological torture which thousands of clerics and laity underwent by the brutal communist security forces. Fears grow that this same fate awaits the elderly Cardinal Zen. Tragically, Cardinal Zen will not be protected by Bergoglio. In the words of Mao, "Communism is not love. Communism is a hammer which we use to crush the enemy." Bergoglio chose to throw the faithful Chinese Catholics to the CCP wolves with his hideous secret pact with the godless CCP. Faithful Chinese Catholics are now abandoned by the Vatican, while the CCP viciously targets them as enemies of the state. Throughout his 90 years, Cardinal Joseph Zen, this devoted son of the Catholic Church of China, experienced and endured the brutal hammer and wrath of the communists against the Chinese Catholic Church. Yet Bergoglio, the vicar of dialogue, refused to meet and listen to Cardinal Zen. Zen begged Bergoglio not to trust the lying and deceptive CCP. The poisonous fruits of the 2018 secret agreement and its subsequent hideous renewal are painfully evident. Zen correctly saw the deal as a betrayal and a suicide pact. Bergoglio cruelly dismissed and ignored Zen's pleas and blithely executed his clandestine deal with the devil, the Chinese communists. The Chinese communists abundantly reward their collaborators, especially those for complicit silence. There is an allegation that the CCP is paying the Vatican $2 billion a year since 2014. That allegation has not been denied by the Vatican. Not surprisingly, the Vatican has remained mute and uncritical in the face of 9 years of a brutal CCP crackdown against Chinese Catholics. Archbishop Cardinal Maria Vigano captured the essence of the illegal, undemocratic, and tyrannical arrest of the 90-year-old Cardinal Zen. He said, "The poison fruits of the Sino-Vatican agreement are now apparent. The Bergoglio Church prefers to remain silent about the persecution of Catholics who belong to the clandestine church after having handed them over to the retaliations at the hands of the patriotic sect and the Chinese Communist Party." Vigano goes on, "In exchange, Beijing rewards the Holy See for its services with substantial annual funding. The mercenaries allow themselves to be bought with 30 pieces of silver that are dripping with the blood of the martyrs of the Church of Silence." Oh, the irony that the verbose and dialogue-obsessed Bergoglio morphs into the Bergoglio Church of Silence as it muzzles any response in the face of the CCP persecution. I'm just going to list all these silent moments. Silence of the CCP violence suppression of the 2019 Hong Kong freedom protests. Silence over the CCP 2020 illegal arrest and show trial of the Catholic freedom leaders Jimmy Lai and Agnes Chow. Silence over the illegal arrest, detention, and disappearance of Chinese bishops. Silence over the CCP destruction of Christian and Catholic churches, clergy detention, which followed the secret CCP deal. Silence over the terms of the secret CCP-Vatican deal over the appointment of bishops. Silence over the ongoing human rights abuses by the CCP. Silence over the arrest, harassment, and detention of Catholic priests who refused to join the CCP-created Catholic Patriotic Church. Silence over the unrelenting persecution of Catholics in China by the CCP. Silence over the CCP Wuhan-generated virus. Rather shockingly, the Vatican praised the China handling of the Wuhan virus. The Chinese Catholic Church has endured centuries of persecution, most notably in the 20th and 21st century. Yet the inevitable persecution of Cardinal Joseph Zen at the hands of Bergoglio's CCP collaborators will reverberate around the world. Joseph Zen, I hope, will take consolation in the words of another persecuted Chinese cardinal, Ignatius Kung of Shanghai, who was imprisoned, tortured, and presumed dead for 33 years. Kung refused to join the Patriotic Church and paid dearly. But after his release from prison, Kung wrote these prophetic and consoling words in 1991. "The church in China has suffered severe persecution. We have been able to stand in the front line of the church. This is our glory. We should be glad and rejoice. As the Shanghai Catholic youth said, We are greatly honored to have been born and lived at the important time, able to bear witness to Christ. We should not be frightened when persecution comes, because it's not by our own strength that we conquer the world, but by the strength of the glorified Christ who has risen from the dead. He said, "Do not fear, for I have conquered the world." The fruits of persecution will endure and nourish the church in China far longer than the poisonous deal with the evil CCP and its Vatican collaborator.
Liz, that is absolutely brilliant. And
what's brilliant is the witness of, the Catholic martyrs and Cardinal Kung. You know, when I think of his words, oh my goodness. You know, and I sent this to Chinese dissidents who are now in the United States and who are trying to help Christians in China, because, I want them to share those words. These words have really been buried. Nobody, I found them in a old book, and I really wanted to share them with, Catholics here in the United States, Catholics in China, Cardinal Zen, because to me, this is what the faith teaches, isn't it, Father? I mean, this is the Catholic Church has the true martyrs. And to really turn this persecution on its head, right?
Yeah.
And, we know that in the end, Our Lady will triumph. The Immaculate Heart will triumph.
And this is where you have to wonder, Liz, if you use terms like faux church and sham church in reference to the Patriotic Church in China. And that's terms that Archbishop Vigano has been using, a false church. And then we also have the true church, which is an eclipse. I think that comes from a Marian apparition. And so we're going to come back to words of encouragement to the Chinese Catholics out there. But I couldn't help but think, if China is just a couple steps ahead of us, and if you're using terms like sham church and true church, you have to wonder if there's not a lesson for the entire Catholic Church at large, that there is a true church and a false church. And of course, Christ's bride can only be one, so there's only one true church, but there could be a so-thought false church that appears to be the real deal. Could there be a false church? And I think some people use the word an anti-church. An anti-church with an anti-pope and a true church with a true but hidden eclipse pope. All of that you're saying makes me think, could China be this cameo or bellwether, maybe just a year ahead of the time, for the rest of the church, what we have to learn that there is a true church and a false church?
Father, I think that's so prophetic. And the more I read and follow what's going on in the Church of China and Hong Kong, Hong Kong was just this thriving democracy metropolis, Catholic Church, many vocations, and you see it just imploding in on itself. But what I've learned, and I see these videos of the, brutal CCP, banging down the doors of, Catholics in their homes, singing Marian hymns, saying the rosary, having, small mass by an underground priest. And then the crucifixes are torn down and the icons, and yet they continue to be faithful. And, many of them are turned in by their neighbors who hear them singing these hymns.
Yes.
And yet they persist. And as Cardinal Kung persisted, as Cardinal Zen, I'm sure, will persist. Yes. And as Jimmy Lai, who sits in jail in Hong Kong, who's, he was a billionaire. His entire fortune was taken over by the CCP. So my thought is for Christians and Catholics here in the United States, we need to pay attention to not only what the communists are doing to religion, what they're doing to the Uyghurs, how they're abusing the Tibetans. and most especially our Catholic Church. And you know, as a child, you know, being so touched in the childlike way, you know, of the poor starving children of China. I mean, I would encourage people to really take on that heart of what it, and you know, I think it's easier for us after COVID. We had our churches shut down. We had to, you know, meet with friends to say the rosary and share our faith. That it's easier now, I think, for us to kind of, it could happen here. It could happen around the world.
And I think, you know, there's so many of us traditional Catholics here in the United States that are tempted to say, God, you placed me in the wrong century. Don't you know I belonged in 13th century France? I am all the time. In fact, someone in, even when I was not even a traditionalist, I was barely waking up from going from liberal Catholic to Orthodox Catholic when I was a theology major at Boston College. This guy said to me, you were born in the wrong century. I wasn't even a traditionalist. I was just barely waking up to be Orthodox. And, you know, when we look at how the traditional Latin Mass is getting dialed down in this country, I think we're very tempted to, not that we say this, just hear the word tempted. We're very tempted to say to God, you placed me in the wrong time. Don't you know I really need the Latin Mass? But when you read those last words of Cardinal Zen and the young people, they said they were thanking God to be born in such an important time. Do we have something to learn from that as traditional Catholics who are made fun of online, who are told our masses are divisive, that we are rigorists? I was actually watching late last night a Jewish woman my age talk about narcissism, and she said one of the narcissist tricks is to always say to the non-narcissist that you're rigid. And I thought, huh, that's funny that a young Jewish woman recognizes that the term that narcissists call non-narcissist is rigid. Isn't that what most traditional Latin Mass Catholics in this country are called by the hierarchy, is rigid? So there's a lot of narcissism, and you know, you can line up narcissism with communism, and Father Ripperger's even lined it up with diabolical thought and everything else. But I'm very convicted when I hear your words to stop complaining about my life and to thank God that I get to fight this battle for traditional Catholicism when it is maybe not under open persecution like what you have at the CCP, but under a smilier persecution that sort of fits in with the American demeanor a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it breaks my heart to see what's happening with the Latin Mass. It infuriates me, our canceled priests. It also, the destruction of religious orders, traditional religious orders, the Corans, the cloistered nuns, and you know, the praying heart of the church, and who have been silently praying this great country, you know, through some difficult times and keeping the church alive, possibly limping along. And so, I mean, that's why, you know, 2013, the visit to the Vatican was such a gift.
Yes.
To me, you know, it was just flipped on its side. I learned about these incredible Chinese Catholics who keep the faith alive. You know, the suffering of Cardinal Kun, you know, and the torture kept the church alive in China, no doubt.
Yes.
And many others, you know, they die in silence, anonymously suffer persecution. We have no idea the impact that has on, you know, the spirituality and the growth of the church in other parts of the
world. That's right, in other parts of the world. And I think it's the betrayal. I mean, you remember the movie Braveheart. You can fight, you can fight, you can fight, you can fight. And the one at the, you know, the one point where he finally loses his energy, or shortly after that, at least some of his energy, not all of it, was when his friend betrays him. And I think that's what's so heartbreaking about the church in China, is she has fought against persecution for possibly up to 2,000 years, but I imagine she's never felt so betrayed from the inside as what happened in 2018. You can fight and be, and again, I'm not saying any Latin mass Catholics in the Western Hemisphere are undergoing what they're under as far as torture and stuff. I just mean if they can rejoice in prison, so much more can we if we have to have some home masses or RV masses for a while or whatever. But my point is that Chinese Catholics have stayed so strong under persecution for a long time, but to be betrayed from within, this is truly Judas's most unkind cut to Christ that you mentioned in your document right there. So, Liz, you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast today, May 24th, 2022, is a special day for a couple of reasons. You just found a third. Tell us about three things happening today on the 24th of May, 2022.
Well, interestingly, it's the World Day of Prayer for China, established by Pope Benedict. Must have, you know, being the brilliant holy man that he is, knew that China would need our prayers. And certainly now more than ever, China needs our prayers, not only today, but every day. Certainly Our Lady, Help of Christians, a feast day today, which is, she's the patroness of China. I'm right in saying that Our Lady of Shashan, which is, you know, a lady help of Christians, that many of those shrines have been destroyed by the CCP in the last 10 years. I mean, can you imagine watching your beautiful parish church be torn down? Or you go to a pilgrimage, you know, and say the rosary, a beautiful pilgrimage, and having that bulldozed. And these people have really endured quite a bit. And then, of course, today, Cardinal Zen, who had to walk into court, into a show trial, plead not guilty to phony charges of colluding with foreign forces, and will face on September 19th the beginning of his trial on these charges. The very same charges, I might add, that put Jimmy Lai in jail for 14 months, put Agnes Chow in jail. So this is the catch-all charge that they're using against our beloved Catholics.
So Liz, the Vatican is saying, listen to the patriotic communist bishops. Most, maybe not most, but many of the very serious Orthodox Catholics, ones who've taken the faith seriously and be willing to be persecuted for the faith for years before 2018, understood to stick to traditional doctrine and to stick to more or less the underground Catholic bishops. I understand there's a semi-permeable membrane that's not exactly as divided as we in the West might think it. But something I've been wondering for a while, maybe you can answer and maybe you can't. I probably should have prepped you for this question before we actually talked off the air. But do most of the really good Catholics know to stick with Orthodox Catholicism out there, or are they being deceived through obedience, which I would call false obedience, into following the patriotic Catholic Church?
You know, there's a little bit of both. We're talking about, you know, I think at 3 million Catholics in the underground church, possibly the same amount in the patriotic church. Obviously, they're good people in both.
Yeah.
But one of the things that they priests and bishops have been forced to do as a result of this agreement is they need to sign up, swear to the Patriotic Church, carry a clergy ID that will be monitored on a frequent basis by the CCP to make sure that they are not from the pulpit preaching tenets against the CCP, against communism. All these churches are closely monitored now. This is a result of these are concrete things that are being done. Additionally,
and it's so evil because 20 years ago they could have said, no, I'm going to stay obedient to the Holy See. Now if they try that, they say, no, they support us.
That's right.
That's what's so evil about this.
As I said before, it's a knife in the heart. Yeah. And finally, Catholics are not allowed to go to any outside public religious sites, activities, pilgrimages, going to anoint the sick in their homes, attend funeral services. It's, you know, the concrete things that have happened as a result of this agreement. And that's why, Father, I mean, this is the thought of this. Priests have just thrown up their hands, you know, turned in everything and said, I'm going home to, you know, my parents' farm.
Really? That's, priests are just giving up in this?
Priests are giving, don't make me, you know, don't make me be a patriotic churchman. And so they've, many have just gone back and to their family homes. And so, and you know, the other thing is it's very difficult to get a lot of information out of China to find out additionally what else is happening. So it's the situation is going to continue to worse. What we saw in mainland China is now being brought to Hong Kong. And we're going to see firsthand, I think, this destruction of a vigorous, holy, faithful Catholic Church.
So who can people support out there?
Okay. Well, I support the Cardinal Kung Foundation. The foundation is here in the United States. They do very good work, quietly support the church, the good underground Catholic Church. Their newsletter is quite good. You get the inside information about what's happening with the rest of the bishops and the priests. And so I would, you know, really encourage people to learn about Cardinal Kung. There's some beautiful prayers, the history of Cardinal Kung. It's a great site to really immerse yourself.
Great. I will link that in the show notes, everybody. And if you're driving, listening to the podcast version, it's just www.cardinalkung, K-U-N-G, foundation.org. But that will also be in the Apple show notes. So when you're done driving, you can listen on the podcast, www.cardinalkungfoundation.org. And there's both the ability to donate and their daily email that they send out.
Yes. The there's another daily newspaper email news that you can get called Bitter Winter. Bitter Winter. It's news of all the faiths, Catholic information inside. They have reporters who secretly send information, pictures, anonymously under pseudonyms. It's an excellent way to really get a sense of the religious persecution, not just with Catholics, but Christians, Uyghurs, they do need support as well. So those are, you know,
yes.
If you're interested in really immersing yourself in this, there's some great books about the Christian martyrs, a wonderful book about the life of Cardinal Kung, by Father Stephen Diogiviani, which is a great book that has all the encyclicals in the back, in the appendix. Pray to Our Lady, Help of Christians, for the Chinese Church. Pray especially for Cardinal Zen, that he stays strong, which we know he will, and that the faith in whatever form, underground church, stays lively and bold and prayerful, which we know it will. Because I think, you know, I have heard from Chinese dissidents who are here in the United States who are trying to help people in China. They so rely on the American Catholic Church, especially the
really?
Catholic Church.
Okay.
To keep the faith alive, to spread the word, to protest abuses that are going on. At any point in history, you know, the CCP can collapse. Xi Jinping, regime for life, you know, his king for life, emperor for life, I should say, can implode in the power of prayer. And so we can never lose hope. And, you know, frankly, I've drawn a lot of, with everything that's happening in the church in the United States and around the world, I've drawn a lot of solace and consolation from those brave Catholics in China, known and unknown, who have carried on. And this is really about truth, isn't it, Father? It's about...
It is, yeah.
It's about the truth of the faith and to stay true to the teachings of a church. You know, people, I don't know if they know, but the it's the Bible's being rewritten by the CCP. Mm. And being cynicized, which is made.
Hopefully it doesn't turn out as bad as the New American Bible.
Yeah, hopefully not as bad. So, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. And, you know, God will put you in a place where you can make a difference. Little did I think, you know, that I'd be talking about, you know, this deal. I'm a child advocate. But I feel
like I don't quote Father Mike Schmitz very often. I'm sure he probably doesn't even know who I am. But I did hear a talk of his once, and he talked about a man who had been – he was a Catholic in China who was tortured over there, wouldn't hand over where the underground church priest was living. And after time in prison, he did escape to the United States or got refugee status. And this guy was a daily communicant, and apparently just kind of the malaise of the American world dialed him down to then start going to Mass just once a week. And then he became just a Christmas Easter Catholic. And so again, I'm not saying that we in the West are suffering even a fraction of the horror that they are over there, but it sounds like they have good communities where we in the West are just so very isolated in our individualism, even found in traditional Catholicism. And so if there are any Chinese Catholics who are listening to this podcast, I would beg for your prayers for us in the West in light of that story, that how in the world could a man undergo torture for Christ in China and come here and become so lukewarm? It's precisely because we are a country where there's a lukewarm religion that's baked into our Protestant Freemasonic foundations that seeps into our Catholicism, and we can lose our souls through lukewarmness just as much as Chinese Catholic apostatizing under torture, probably more rapidly here with less excuse. So I would ask any Chinese Catholics listening to this podcast, really pray for us because our persecution is a lot less glorious and a lot more lukewarm. It's so easy for us to sneak into, even in the traditional world, to sneak into laziness and lukewarmness. We look to you, Chinese Catholics, who are being tortured and thrown in prison, as our inspiration to stay strong under these trying times for all of us Catholics. We ask you to offer up some of your suffering for us and vice versa. And Liz, there may not be any Catholics in China listen to this podcast, but and they may not care what a couple Irish people from Chicago who are Jesuit educated say, but what would you say to them to encourage them in their trials?
I would say keep the faith and to remember the twinkle in Cardinal Kung Zai when he said, what kept me through was saying the rosary on my 10 fingers. I think that's a good message, certainly is for me. I pray every day that the rosary will take off again. You know, Father Peyton, the family yes. prays together, stays together. Especially now, the most potent weapon against the godless communist Chinese party is Mary's rosary, which she gave to us. So,
yes,
Our Lady, Help of Christians.
Pray for us.
Pray for us and spread the road. Help us.
And I'm sorry, I know this keeps sounding like we've been wrapping this up for 15 minutes, but now I have something to add to that. Okay. Cardinal Zen was on Raymond Arroyo's EWTN. This was about a year ago. And so this was before his arrest. And he said something really interesting. He said, Chinese Catholics have learned in prison to live without the sacraments, but they can't live without the faith. And as I hear that, we remember Mary's the destroyer of all heresies, including communism, and that's going to come through the triumph of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And I think this is exactly why all Western Catholics and Eastern Catholics need to be, maybe more than ever in history. I mean, this is always true, but considering what we're facing as far as modernism and communism, I'm really glad that you just mentioned the rosary. 10 fingers is all you need. Even if they cut those off, you can still count in your mind. But I really believe these are the days of Mary as we prepare for the triumph of the Immaculate Heart of Mary in the West and in the East. And dare I say, Mary's more important than ever in church history right now because she's the destroyer of heresies, and there's more heresies than ever. And she's the one who magnifies Christ, who in this time of eclipsed church, we need the magnifying glass of Mary more than any other time in history. So I agree 100% with you that Mary is always our fastest way to Jesus, but especially in a time of eclipse of the church, Mary is our most rapid way to Jesus. One more book recommendation is called Diaries of the Chinese Martyrs by Girolamo Fazzini, and the subtitle is Stories of Heroic Catholics Living in Mao's China. I have it on Kindle, but I haven't listened or haven't read it yet. It's come out by the Catholic Company as a producer. You know anything about that book, Liz?
No, I have it on Kindle and I haven't read it yet.
How many books do we have on Kindle that we haven't read?
Yeah, that's right. I got it. It sounded wonderful. But I would encourage everybody. In fact, I'm going to show you this book. It's been such an eye opener because this is, I don't know if you can see it. Can you see it?
Yep. The Life of Ignatius Cardinal Kung Pin Mei.
Yes.
Just called Ignatius on the front, huh?
Yeah,
by Monsignor Stephen DiGiovanni.
Yes. It's just, my goodness, it's a primer on the evils of communism.
Okay.
It's a primer on the strength and bravery and courage of the Catholic Church in China. It's one of those books. I have two of them. This is, one of them. And I just love it. And every time I open up a page, I learn something more, even though I've read it cover to cover. So I would really just encourage people to, immerse themselves in this beautiful history of the church. And it's a 21st century history.
And then, Liz, it looks like you can be found at yourchildren.com. Liz serves as the coalition partner for Save the Persecuted Christians, and she's also founder of yourchildren.com and the Global Center for the Protection of Children. Elizabeth Yore, thank you so much for joining me and my listeners. This has been one of the most memorable and honorable guests we've ever had on this podcast. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Father. It's a delight to talk about the wonderful Catholics in China.
God bless you.
You too.